All right, thank you. Now we are going to switch things up a little bit from the agenda. Kendra is going to give her presentation first. You can see it up there on the overhead, and then I'll give an introductory presentation to the presentation that will follow right after that on surveillance indicators from Vermont. So it's not what it looks like in the book. It's just, Susan Schoenfeld is not here from Vermont. We have Wanda Kosman, and Wanda is extremely fabulous for coming. She's actually providing information on what a huge group of folks have done in Vermont. And you know it's hard when you have to compile a lot of work and a lot of information from a lot of people. So I'm going to thank you in advance for doing that. So we're going to go ahead and get started. So as I said, Kendra Viner, practice that, with the Philadelphia Department of Health is going to give her presentation first. And she works with the Varicella Active Surveillance Project.
Good morning. The title of my talk is Comparing Active to Passive Surveillance in Philadelphia from 2005 to 2009 and the implications of this for the transition to a nationwide passive varicella disease surveillance. So just by way of background, varicella and herpes zoster have been notifiable conditions in Philadelphia since 1995. Reports are obtained through our active surveillance area. So if this is Philadelphia County, the active surveillance area is represented by 7 zip codes in the western portion of the city, shown here in blue. We also obtain reports on varicella from our passive surveillance area, which is the remainder of Philadelphia County. Since the varicella vaccine was licensed in 1995, active surveillance in West Philadelphia has documented substantial reductions in disease incidence. So as you can see, the red line there shows the increase in vaccine coverage in West Philly, and the blue bars show the decrease in cases. So while active surveillance has been essential to documenting this decline in disease, it is expensive and time-consuming. In addition, the decline in disease incidence has warranted a transition to a nationwide passive surveillance system. National case-based surveillance is important to assess varicella epidemiology in the two-dose varicella vaccine era, and this includes looking at changes in trends around age distribution and disease severity. In 2003, the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists, or CSTE, recommended that for case-based surveillance, states should collect the following 3 key variables: age of disease onset, lesion grade, and vaccination status. And these were at a minimum on the case-based form. And as of 2009, which is the earliest data we have on this, 36 states were conducting case-based passive surveillance for varicella. So the objectives of our study are essentially to assess how accurately the Philadelphia passive surveillance system, as compared with the active surveillance system, classifies case reports, detects varicella disease incidence, and within that also detects severe varicella cases and cases among varicella vaccinees, also known as breakthrough cases. So our data sources, we use data collected from our passive and our active surveillance areas from 2005 to 2009. Our active surveillance area essentially consists of 300 or so sites, daycares, schools, healthcare providers, recreation centers, et cetera, that are mandated twice a month to send us reports of any varicella cases that they have. They're also mandated, if they have no reports, to indicate that they have the absence of disease. Any cases that are not reported through this method, we usually obtain through electronic billing and ER records from healthcare providers. Once we have obtained these reports on cases, we then conduct case interviews with either the patient themselves or their parent or guardian in order to obtain detailed clinical and demographic information about the patient. In the event that we can't contact the patient, we may also review medical records from their healthcare provider. We also encourage healthcare provider sites to send specimens to the CDC for confirmatory viral testing. So our passive surveillance area is a little bit different. Basically, non-active sites outside of West Philly report cases of varicella to us as they occur. So they're not mandated to report in any kind of regular way. Then abbreviated investigation forms are completed by the reporting source or, in some cases, by interviewing the patient or the parent. Both passive and active case reports are then given a final status, which I'll go over in a minute, of either confirmed, probable, or excluded. So confirmed cases are basically individuals with acute onset of a generalized maculopapulovesicular rash that is not linked to any other disease. This disease is then validated by one of the following mechanisms, either through lab confirmation, an epi link to another confirmed or probable case, or through more detailed case information from the full investigation. And this may involve or include lesion character, rash description, the certainty of the healthcare provider diagnosis, or whether or not antivirals were prescribed. I should mention here that this way of validating the disease is not possible using the passive surveillance case-based form, because this data is just not included on the form. Probable cases are basically those, again, with acute onset of a generalized maculopapulovesicular rash, but probable cases lack any of the three validation criteria. Cases are excluded if they end up having a diagnosis of zoster, immunity screening, they come back PCR negative, or their healthcare provider diagnoses another rash illness. So we began by looking at the report status of all our reports obtained from our active and passive surveillance areas from 2005 to 2009. And as you can see in blue, most of the reports from our active surveillance area were either confirmed or excluded. So they were given a definitive diagnosis. And this is in contrast to the reports that were obtained from our passive surveillance area, which were primarily given a status of probable, so a non-definitive status. This is the same data essentially shown broken down by year. So the proportion of case reports is shown on the y-axis, and we can look at first the proportion of confirmed case reports, and you can see that the majority of those are from our active surveillance area, whereas the majority of our probable case reports were obtained from our passive surveillance area, shown in yellow. We then went on to look at disease incidence that estimated by both our active and passive surveillance areas. And as you can see, the graph on the left shows that when we put our confirmed and probable reports together, passive and active surveillance estimate a similar degree of incidence. When we look at just our confirmed reports, you can see that varicella disease incidence is greatly underestimated by passive surveillance. So this led us to the question of why it is that so many passive surveillance reports are closed as probable. We came up with three potential reasons for why this might be. The first is that the completeness of case finding is lower for passive than active surveillance. The second is that healthcare provider sites in the passive surveillance area may be less likely to lab test patients. And the third is that we rely on clinical variables to confirm patients or to help validate disease. And passive surveillance case reports are generally limited to those three variables recommended by CSTE. So we began by looking at the completeness of case finding using capture-recapture analysis. And essentially what we were doing was determining the proportion of case reports that were obtained from both schools and daycares and healthcare providers, and this really helps to validate the diagnosis. So as you can see, if we look at active surveillance, 66% of the reports obtained through active surveillance were obtained from both schools and daycare sites and healthcare providers. And this is in contrast to passive surveillance, where only 40% of the reports are obtained from both sites. So passive surveillance does indeed have lower completeness of case finding than active surveillance. We then went on to look at whether healthcare provider sites in the passive surveillance area are less likely to lab test patients. But we actually found that when we looked at the proportion of lab-confirmed cases from 2005 to 2009 obtained from our passive and active surveillance areas, you can see the proportion there in the brackets, 9.8% of our passive surveillance reports and 10.8% of our active surveillance reports were lab-confirmed. So this is very similar. We also found that the reporting source for these lab-confirmed cases was similar for both active and passive surveillance. So the last potential explanation for why passive surveillance reports, so many, are closed as probable was that we rely on data on these clinical variables that aren't included on the passive surveillance form. So the question that we asked is, are these three CSTE key variables being utilized to confirm disease? And in fact, 71% of our probable passive surveillance case reports actually have complete data for all three variables. So why aren't these reports confirmed? Well, we discovered that most of these reports are vaccinated cases, so they usually have atypical disease. And without the additional rash details, epi-links, lab confirmation, or certainty of diagnosis, which are variables that are found on the active surveillance form, our staff really could not be confident about assigning a confirmed case status for these cases. So our first set of conclusions is that while Philadelphia passive and active surveillance systems do result in similar estimates of incidence, the majority of case reports are classified as probable. And this is likely the result of lower case finding completeness and the absence of additional variables on the passive surveillance form that help to confirm disease. So just returning to the objectives, the last objective that we had was to assess how accurately our passive surveillance system detects severe varicella cases classified as having greater than 50 lesions, I should say moderate to severe, and cases among varicella vaccinees, or the proportion of breakthrough cases. But as we find here, if we look at the proportion of hospitalized cases obtained from our passive and active surveillance areas, and then also break this down by reporting source, we see that both our passive and active surveillance areas have reported to us a similar proportion of hospitalized cases. We also found that they reported to us a similar proportion of breakthrough cases, and this is broken down by age group and also vaccination status, so whether the case reports were given one or two doses of the varicella vaccine. And the take-home message here, again, is that our passive and active surveillance area, we obtained a similar proportion of breakthrough case reports. We also looked at disease severity and found, again, when we stratify this by vaccine status, that our passive and active surveillance areas reported to us a similar proportion of our sort of moderate to severe case reports. So the second set of conclusions is that passive surveillance can be effective at examining trends in varicella-related hospitalizations and disease severity by vaccination status, especially when methods similar to active surveillance are used. So using electronic data to identify hospitalizations, including that standard CSTE-required question for lesion grade, and verifying vaccination with our immunization registry, healthcare provider, or the school. However, in spite of this, we really do need better case ascertainment in order to reliably assess the impact of the two-dose varicella vaccine on varicella incidence within our passive surveillance area. So this just leads to the question of whether we should consider renewing discussion about how to conduct case-based passive surveillance. And topics for this discussion might include whether to recommend the collection of additional rash variables, EpiLink, and or certainty of healthcare provider diagnosis to the passive surveillance short form, whether and how to educate non-traditional reporting sites, so schools and daycares, about varicella and how to report varicella to us, and whether and how to increase lab testing by clinical providers. And this would involve informing healthcare providers that they can bill for testing and that the CDC can perform testing if testing is not available from their site. So...